How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team, every day.
Hey there, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. We are the Rain and Jays. John Corral is here. John, that's what happens when you podcast at 11 in the morning on a Sunday. Let's start that over.
You should keep that in. I'm Jay King, not John King.
Stop it. Fine. You want to keep it in? We'll keep it in. I don't care. Keep it in. Keep that in? Sure. So we're recording early. I've only had one coffee, so usually I'm operating on another kind of brown liquid, but let's go. So today on the show, Al Horford's back, Jay Crowder's back, and the Celtics beat the Pistons. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Marcus Smart risking his life, basically, for an offensive rebound that ended up getting the Celtics a win.
Greatest hustle play of all time. Not really, but it was unreal.
It was pretty good. And then we'll get back to some of the stuff from Friday night, the Isaiah Thomas comments about quitting, Draymond Green's comments about the fans, which afterwards I took some shit for that on Twitter too, so we'll get into that. And then, of course, the Zaza dance, which Jay King is expertly recreated.
that was probably my finest internet moment.
Yeah. Yeah, that's up there. So, all right, that's the lineup. Let's get right into it. The Celtics went into Detroit last night, Saturday night. This is the Monday show. So Saturday night, they became the first team this season to win in Detroit and to score more than 90 points. So nice accomplishment there for the Celtics against a team that's pretty stingy at home. And Al Horford played a little bit of a role in this one.
Just
a little bit. 18 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks, including the big monster block on Baines at the end. A team high plus 17. And that's always telling to me, Jay. It's always telling to me in a 2-point win when one guy is such an outrageous plus in something like that, just shows you everything positive he did on the floor.
Yeah, you didn't need the plus 17 to tell you, though, because from literally the very first play, Horford did everything. The first play, they dumped it into him in the post. He drew a double team, found Amir Johnson wide open underneath the basket, layup, and yeah, like, bam, it hit you. Al Horford is a huge, huge difference maker for the Boston Celtics. Like, you go from Kelly Olynyk in the starting lineup to Al Horford, and it's a different level of basketball that your team is playing. So Horford was incredible, and it was really nice to see that he was healthy after missing 9 straight games and had clearly no ill effects of the concussion. And so when people were so mad at him for taking as much time as he did, first of all, shut up, it's a concussion. It's his brain. It is his brain, so let him get healthy. Second of all, that's what you want. When a guy gets healthy, he was doing like 3 or 4 workouts a day with strength coach Brian Dew, and he missed more than 2 weeks of action and came back like he was in perfect shape. So a lot of credit goes to Al Horford for getting himself back in shape, and damn, he was good, man. That block on Baines... he really did like he just engulfed Baines.
Oh yeah,
just blanketed him. Not even a prayer of that shot getting near the rim.
No, and he had that recognition that once it was clear Baines was getting the ball, it's not like it was a guard or any like a Russell Westbrook type of guy who could take a dribble in 1.3 seconds and get a quick shot off. Baines was going to catch and Baines was going to shoot, and that was all Baines was going to do. So Al Horford
Baines
could
was
commit
going to get humiliated.
And the best part, if you look at that, they jump at the exact same time. So they both gather and jump at the exact same time. If you watch the waistband of their shorts, they start off at the same spot, and then all of a sudden Al Horford's goes up to like Baines's chest. He just jumps that much higher, and he's got this big wingspan. He just, oh man. And Baines takes the ball. He's like turning to shoot, and then he's like, oh shit. And he brings the ball as far back as he possibly can to try to get some kind of shot off. And Horford's so high up, he just blocks the whole thing with his forearm. It's fantastic. Baines had no shot. But that's, look, Al Horford, really good, not only recognizing that, but obviously athletic enough to do something about it. And an all-around great game. And
yeah, and one thing that his return did was, and Crowder's too, obviously, was it allowed Stevens to go to the IT&D lineup, which is Thomas, Bradley, Smart, Crowder, Horford, maybe the most interesting lineup the Celtics have. I don't know if it's the best lineup, but that lineup is going to score a lot of points this year. You can see it. They played 7 minutes together. They scored 18 points. They shot 7-for-11 from the field as a unit. And I mean, with Horford out there, with all those guards, there's just so much room for Isaiah Thomas to operate. It was easy for him when those guys were on the court. So they had some defensive issues with those guys. They're so small, even though a lot of those guys are good defenders. When you're that small, you have to be so good to stop people. But offensively, that unit is going to be – it's going to give teams hell. That is the best – I'm very confident saying that's the best offensive lineup the Celtics have had since Brad Stevens has gotten there.
Well, you could see that Isaiah Thomas had not his best shooting night of the season, 7-of-22, but he kept going to the rim and just kept getting swallowed up until the end of the game, where Stan Van Gundy had subbed out Andre Drummond and the Celtics had this lineup in, and all of a sudden he could get to the rim because the floor had been spaced enough. And that little bit, that little sliver that he needed was all it took to get that the layup at the end of the game and then get there for two free throws. He scored 4 points in the fourth quarter.
That was a questionable call, by the way. Questionable call.
Still, but that's when you're Isaiah Thomas or a guy like James Harden or DeMar DeRozan, the guys who drive excessively, yep, and get a lot of fouls, you're going to get those kinds of calls. That's why you keep doing it. That's just, you get it into a ref's head that you get fouled on those plays and you get those calls.
No doubt. And yeah, so Thomas with that unit was like, he had a weirdly inefficient game. He rarely goes 7-for-22, but when those guys were all on the court, like you said, just easy getting to the hoop. That unit, it's fun. And Stevens ended both halves with it. It was like he set it up. He knew he couldn't use that group a lot because if you do, you spread those guys thin. They're so small. They're all playing up a position. But he set it up so that he played them the last 3 or 4 minutes of each half, and they closed out the game. Napa
Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How. Napa Know How. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
The last minute or two was so hectic, man. It was out of control. We got to talk about Marcus Smart.
Oh,
Marcus,
yeah. Let's talk about it.
Risking because his life.
That was crazy. You're right, though. The last minute and a half or so was nuts because Isaiah Thomas scores. Then Tobias Harris hits that corner three to tie it up. and then all of a sudden, here comes Marcus Smart It was funny because Isaiah had gotten to the rim over and over and over again, and there was no doubt in my mind that he was going to go try and score again until he kicked it out to Jay Crowder for a three in the corner, which credit to Isaiah Thomas. He just set everybody up. He drew the defense in and gave Crowder as clear a look as you're going to get with 5 seconds left on the clock. But then Marcus Smart, as Crowder is shooting it, he's a step behind the three-point line, and he just starts barreling towards the hoop. I'm surprised that he didn't break his neck the way he landed.
Yeah, I mean, he was like 8 feet outside of the three-point arc when he started his sprint. And then he tumbled over the top of someone. My favorite moment of that sequence, the most Marcus Smart moment of that sequence, is when Horford puts the rebound back after Smart had thrown it up and kept it alive, and Horford puts it back in. Smart is on the ground, like he had just landed on his arm, maybe his head a little bit. He ended up limping off the court shortly thereafter. But for a moment, he thinks the Pistons are going to go back at the Celtics, and he hasn't realized yet that they've called timeout. And he's ready to hop back to his feet, and you can see the moment. Like he's ready to hop back, sprint back on defense, even though he had just died. climb out of the grave and go back on defense. And then you can see him when he realizes that they called timeout, and then he's like, okay, I can finally chill. Like, I don't
give me a second.
I don't need to hustle anymore right now.
You know. Really,
like, you can see the exact moment on tape. Go watch it. It is perfect Marcus Smart, because he's ready to sprint back on defense, and he's dead.
I don't know who it was. It might have been, was it Ish Smith or something? I forget who he jumped over. But
I think it was Smith, yeah.
You know it's bad when the play is over and the opposing team like goes back like to check on him. It was like, are you okay, man? Like that was a little crazy. I'm glad it worked out the way it did. Ultimately, it's okay. He's okay. Imagine if that ball had come off a little bit at a different angle and he had done that and followed it up with a dunk. Can you imagine how that would be like the play of the year? He was up there.
I feel like the way it happened, though, was more impressive, because a lot of people have put back dunks. Like, you time it perfectly, you go in there. Like, there are not a lot of guys who jump over like two or three guys and fall and die and still somehow save the game for their team. One part of that play that was interesting was Stevens did not call a timeout after the Pistons hit a three on the previous possession. And what that did was Andre Drummond was on the bench. He had been taken out for offensive purposes, and they couldn't put Andre Drummond back in. One of the NBA's best rebounders was sitting on the Detroit bench while the Pistons gave up an offensive rebound to lose the game. And so Stan Van Gundy said he was kicking himself after the game that he didn't keep Drummond in there. And Stevens was probably sitting there with a smile like, yeah.
Well, look, those are the little things that make a great coach. Like, that's just the recognition that instead of doing what most coaches do, which is call the timeout, set a play, because you can't, for some reason, a lot of these coaches can't trust their guys to run plays in situations like that. He knows he's got Drummond on the bench, so he knows he's got an opportunity if there's a miss to at least an increased chance at getting a putback. And look, that lineup with Horford out there had been getting a bunch of offensive rebounds. The Celtics had 9 offensive rebounds. Horford had a couple of them. So Smart had a couple of them. So he knows that this team had been rebounding okay during stretches, and that lineup had been rebounding okay. So, yeah, that's a slick move. That's a smart move. That's recognizing it and trusting the guys on the floor to come up and execute a play. And, of course, there was no shot clock. So Isaiah could hold the ball. You could call out a play if you want to call out a play. So it wasn't taking that huge a risk. The offense was right in front of them. So everything worked out in their favor.
By the way, how close was Marcus Smart to picking up a loose ball foul and sending the Pistons to the line with 1 second left?
Oh,
and Marcus Smart just forever teetering on the edge of either brilliance or devastation.
Like, there's
no in between with that guy.
It's yeah.
either the best or the worst play that's ever happened.
That's Marcus.
That's how it goes with Marcus Smart.
That's Marcus. That he's. I mean, this is the guy who hurt his finger diving for a ball in a summer league game. So that's Marcus Smart. He's just never going to not be 100 miles an hour out there. So that's what are you going to do? You just take the good with the bad. And last night, the good was him doing some kind of acrobatic thing over three Pistons just to keep the ball alive. So, you know, I want to mention Kelly Olynyk played 54 seconds in the second half, essentially benched in the second half, which it was interesting because, you know, he's obviously a big part of this. And interesting that, first of all, I'm glad that everybody was back and healthy because that allows Brad Stevens to do something like this, to say, okay, Kelly can't rebound at all. He's getting crushed out there. We can't put him out on the floor. But at the same time, Kelly Olynyk, we can't have him playing bad enough where Brad's like, I can't play this guy.
I think he got a little unlucky too because he came off the bench during that third quarter skid where they were playing really poorly. And then he was just like the first one to make a mistake. And Stevens looked down the bench and he's like, well, I could go to Zeller, I guess. So they went to Zeller and Zeller was Zeller. And then Jonas Derebko came in and gave some great minutes. I thought Jonas Derebko really picked them up in the fourth quarter with his energy. He hasn't always had a great season. Like compared to last year, I would say he's playing at a little worse level for the most part this season. But I thought against the Pistons, he was really energetic and picked them up after that disgusting third quarter. Derebko did a lot for them in the fourth to keep the Pistons off the board and put the Celtics back ahead.
I think Derebko is going to be that guy that plays well when the team's at full strength. And I think, to be fair, he's been asked to do a lot that he wouldn't normally do. And that's been true of Derebko. I think Derebko is a very specific kind of player. Like, he works with specific lineups with these guys. And that, I think, has been true of him during his entire time here. So to be fair to him, that I think without Crowder and Horford, he's been asked to play a lot of minutes that he wouldn't normally play in situations he wouldn't normally play. So I'm not saying he's going to come out and hit 3 of 3 from three and get, you know, and fill up the stat sheet like 9.6 rebounds, blah, 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 like that. But I think he's going to give you these good spot minutes in, you know, 18 to 20 minutes a game type of role. Like, I think that role works for him. So I think now that everybody's back, Derebko will be a little more what we expect. And I think he'll play a little bit better. Olynyk, yeah, you might be right. It's kind of curious. Now, I'm thinking I can't wait to see what the new collective bargaining agreement is going to give us, because I'm starting to wonder if Kelly Olynyk is going to survive this season in Boston. And if they feel like when the new collective bargaining agreement comes out that they can't re-sign Olynyk, that they might start shopping him, and at least maybe not as part of a star player type of thing, but I'm just wondering if the new CBA makes re-signing Olynyk a little dicey, and Brad Stevens isn't going to want to lose a guy like that for nothing. And if he's suddenly falling out of favor with Brad Stevens, if suddenly they might move in a different direction. It's just, I don't think that's going to happen, but it's something that it's suddenly a thought that's popped into my head.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's falling out of favor at all. I think it was just a one-time thing where Stevens didn't like the way he was playing against Detroit and went to Zeller instead. I wouldn't read too far into it. I will say that with the CBA, the proposed CBA changes, the rumored CBA changes at least, it could make it tough to re-sign Olynyk. And I don't think that will make them trade him, just because the reason that it will be tough to re-sign him is because you want to clear max cap space. And if you trade him for someone who has more than this year left on his deal, then it would be a similar situation with that guy. So I think you keep Kelly Olynyk for now, see what happens in the summer. He's a valuable piece to them. He does a lot for them on both ends, kind of quiet stuff sometimes, but important stuff. So, yeah, well, I mean, we'll see. Kelly Olynyk is in a weird situation going into the summer.
Yeah. Okay. Let's move on to the Friday night festivities. So the Celtics got crushed by the Warriors. They hung tight for a while, but then the third quarter happened, and the Warriors just ran away with it. After the game, Isaiah Thomas basically says, "We quit. The coaching staff quit," and you know he was pissed off. Today in the Globe and the Herald, I don't know where else, it's the two places I saw it, that Isaiah called Brad Stevens. First of all, calls him up at like 3 a.m, which is a total NBA thing to do, 3 a.m conversations, and he basically cleared the air. And Brad Stevens said that, look, this guy's an emotional guy. He's an emotional player, and I'm okay with that level of passion. So I'll throw it out to you first. That what's your take on Isaiah Thomas's comments and all of that stuff?
When Isaiah Thomas and or Jay Crowder says something in the heat of a loss, just disregard it.
Seriously.
By the time the next morning arrives, they'll be completely upbeat, optimistic, in line with what the coaching staff wants. It's just in the moment, Isaiah couldn't take him out of the loss and look at it and see, okay, they took me out with 5 minutes left in the third quarter. We were down 27 points. We had just given up a 24-3 run. It just wasn't working. So it wasn't that they gave up. It was that we were getting shellacked. We had a back-to-back the next night in Detroit. So he saw that, and he realized it, and I'm sure that's why he called at 3 a.m. to say, you know what, I think I might have spoken out of line a little bit. And to his credit, he kind of owned it. And he said, my teammates know that I have their back, and the coaches know that I have their back, and I was just pissed. So that happens, and guys understand. Nobody looked at that and actually thought they gave up. Like they came back in the fourth quarter, not all the way back, obviously, but they kept working hard. Isaiah ended up getting back in there, and Draymond Green, he was like, "Yeah, they didn't quit. Like, did you see their fourth quarter run?" what did he say? "That's not a team we ever expect to quit," is exactly what he said. So, yeah, it was just him being pissed, and it wasn't a big deal, but it sounded like a big deal because he did kind of throw the coaches into that. But he was just pissed because he wanted to play more. And he's a competitor, and that's it. That's as far as it goes.
Yeah. Again, your point is good with that and Crowder. They're both in the same boat. I would rather have guys that occasionally spout off emotionally after a loss than have guys that are kind of laughing about things after losses. You know, you hear about teams that just got killed and they're in the locker room and they're just laughing about it.
I almost fought one of my high school teammates for that one time.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, my family's going to a tailgate and I want our style to stand out from the crowd.
Just go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, Old Navy's got all the latest fall styles. Plus, during Old Navy's colossal sale, you'll save up to 50% off store-wide.
Did you say up to 50% off?
I did, so don't sit on the sidelines. Old Navy has the perfect pants from $19, stylish dresses from $15, and comfy tees for the family from just $6 right now at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
We're cheering for Old Navy.
High Fashion, Old Navy. Valid 10-2 to 10-10, select styles only.
Yeah. No, that's I'm with you.
Yeah, we got beat by 20, and we had the worst game. It was like a team we should have beaten. I came in, he was laughing about something. He was like one of my best friends, and I shoved him up against the locker. I was so fucking mad.
But that's a good thing. To me, And that's inside, like, maybe a fan, maybe somebody listening right now would be like, why is shoving somebody into a locker a good thing? Well, you know what? So that stuff happens from time to time in locker rooms. Maybe not to that extent, Jay, but, you know, that stuff happens.
I was a psycho back then, man. I was out of my mind.
Was?
Yeah, well, I still am, but back then for sure.
The I would rather have people who take losses to heart and at least after games, it's hard to separate yourself. And I know fans want players to be perfect. And after a game, a guy says something and some fans or radio talk show hosts will get on a guy and say, oh, you know, you're not supposed to say that stuff and blah, blah, blah. In the heat of a loss, that's okay. Guys channel their emotions. A guy like Isaiah Thomas, especially, when you talk about the chip he has on his shoulder, do you guys understand what kind of place you have to get into mentally every day to go out there and compete the way he does and the way Jay Crowder does and the way Marcus Smart does? You understand that they do things that Marcus Smart play is something no rational human being would do. Anybody else in that situation would be like, that's okay. Al's got it. I'm cool. But you get yourself into a place where that is just you're focused. You're in a zone. You get into this and it requires a lot of emotion. And the extreme example, of course, is Kevin Garnett, who just takes it to, you know, the nth degree. But these players, the best players, the most competitive players, take it to they get into a spot. They get into these zones where they're almost not themselves. So I'm okay with Isaiah Thomas's comments. I was also okay with Draymond Green's comments after the game. And this is where I took a little bit of shit on Twitter. Draymond Green afterwards basically said of fans booing Kevin Durant that was crap and something about fans need to reevaluate themselves if they're booing a guy just for a decision that he made, a personal decision he made about where he's working. And I retweeted the comments saying, I agree with Dre. I don't think Kevin Durant should have been booed. I'm not saying you're wrong to boo. If you want to boo a guy, boo a guy. It's a basketball game. Boo whoever you want. I don't care. But I wouldn't have booed him. And I think Draymond Green is right. Why would you boo him? Like, why? Because he chose Golden State over us? I thought we were always a long shot. And the fact that we were even in a discussion at the end, I thought that was great. So he chose Golden State. So what? But I know that I might be in the minority on that. I don't think booing him for that is really called for.
Yeah, but I mean, Draymond took it too far to say it's going to scare away free agents. Come on.
Yeah, that was a little bit.
He was just getting Durant's back, and he knew Durant wasn't going to really defend himself against the boos. So Draymond decided, you know what? I am going to go out there. I'm going to stand in front of my teammate, and I'm going to take this one. So I loved Draymond doing it. I think it was a great teammate thing to do, but I doubt even he believes that. And if he was really telling the truth, there's no way he thinks that will scare away prospective free agents in the future.
Right.
Guys want fan bases like that. Al Horford went to Boston partly because he saw, you know, that they cared. And that was a plus to him when he looked at it. He's probably been tortured in Boston at the Garden before. And he liked that because they weren't the Hawks fans who show up late and are really quiet and don't really care. So I think even Draymond would tell you he was exaggerating if he was being 100% truthful. But yeah, I didn't get the boos. To be fair, they weren't that loud. Like, it became a big deal because of what Draymond said, but it wasn't that bad. He was booed in pregame introductions, which is normal. Every opposing star gets booed in pregame introductions. The Warriors were all booed. His were probably a little louder, but not too much louder. And then he got booed a little bit when he touched the ball in the first quarter, but it kind of went away. So it really, really, really wasn't a huge deal until Draymond decided he was going to protect his teammate, and then it became a news story because of that. So Yeah. Boo whoever you want. Do whatever you want.
Yeah, I mean, that's fine. That's fine.
Fun. But Durant didn't, he didn't do anything to deserve it. He just chose a team, and I think people understand that.
I think so, too. And again, I didn't think it was a huge deal until I saw the comments, too, and I retweeted it saying what I said. But, man, I got people didn't like the fact that I was agreeing with Draymond Green.
Yeah.
For the most part, I didn't agree with everything he said, but I basically agreed with the general tone of booing somebody for picking a different team. Especially the guy that you cheered last year, but I was like, well, it's not a big deal. I don't see why people are booing, but
yeah, I have to make a correction to something I said earlier. I said Smart was inches away from sending the Pistons to the line. By a miracle, the Pistons weren't in the bonus. I just checked the stats. Celtics.
Oh, they weren't.
Three personal fouls in the fourth. Which is amazing. They almost always put teams in the bonus, but they didn't in the fourth quarter last night. So I lied earlier. I'm sorry.
That's big of you to admit that.
Yeah. I had to check it because as soon as I said it,
I just assumed they were in the bonus. I just
assumed. As soon as I said it, I was like, I'm not sure they were in the bonus, actually. So I'm sorry for lying. I won't do it again. Actually, I probably will. But I'll try to man up and be honest afterward.
Jay, you can lie as long as you're doing the Zaza dance when you're doing it.
I don't know why I did that.
I don't know why you did that either, honestly. I see that video everywhere now. And yeah, but you did, and it's out there. And no, the people, they love it. Why did Zaza do it?
So I don't think everyone knows. So Zaza did that little dance during the Warriors game, and it was really disrespectful. Like,
it really was.
28 points, I think, after his jumper. And he did some stupid little dance. Maybe the worst dance move I've ever seen in a professional sporting event. And so I replicated it. And I took a video of myself doing it. And I put it on Twitter. Some people were revolted. Other people appreciated it. Some people were revolted and appreciated it. So... it wasn't my finest moment, but I felt like it was a funny dance. It had to be replicated. People have to do the Zaza. That was one of the worst dances of all time.
That was ridiculous. My favorite thing about that was afterwards, Jaylen Brown was like, oh, we'll see them again.
Yeah.
Like, Jaylen was just like pissed.
He said, this is my favorite moment of that post game. Against the Warriors, he went on to say after, you know, he's like, that was a little disrespectful, Zaza. He said, we're going to play them again. But, you know, they won. Next time we have to go in and punch them in the mouth. And then he realized what he said. He's like, oh, no, like I didn't mean that. Like, not literally, guys.
Figuratively punch him in the mouth.
Yes. Not literally. Also, Zaza probably deserved a literal punch in the mouth after that.
Zaza has done plenty over his entire career to deserve many punches in the mouth. I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of Zaza Pachulia. And neither is Kevin Garnett.
I was never a Zaza guy until that dance. Now I'm a Zaza guy.
Oh, God. What does it say about you when that dance wins you over?
I mean, I'm all about having fun. If you're having fun and you dance on someone else's grave, by all means do it. But if someone else dances on your grave, you can't be too upset about it. Like, you have to just let it go.
Well, I can see that, I suppose. You got to be willing to take it, but you know he's not willing to take it. That's the type of thing that you're inviting some sort of retaliation. And he's lucky that this is 2016. And not 1986, because in 1986, he would have gotten sickled the next time down the floor.
How pissed would Brad Stevens have been at the Celtics if they had retaliated?
Oh, my God. No, it would have been the worst thing in the world. But like I said, you know, 30 years ago, that would have been what happened. An enforcer somewhere would have taken him out the next time down. and it would have erupted. There's no doubt about that in my mind. Nowadays, you got to let that go. That's what it is. And you can have a problem with the NBA now for being that way. I don't care really, but it's just a different time. But yeah, that would have gotten him an elbow somewhere, somehow, quickly.
Yep.
So,
doing the Zaza. Feeling slow, working it.
Celtics are in Minnesota tonight, Monday night. And then they've got Brooklyn on Wednesday and San Antonio Friday afternoon, the day after Thanksgiving at home. So a little bit of a road trip. The Minnesota game is going to be interesting as we wrap up the show. I just am fascinated with Karl Anthony Towns, and Wiggins is playing out of his mind right now. So Minnesota is going to be a tough, tough game, I think.
Yeah, they're a better team than their record, I think. But, I mean, you look at this next stretch, Celtics have a chance to put some wins together. They've got, I mean, Minnesota's definitely winnable. Brooklyn, obviously the Spurs are tough. But then you got Miami, Detroit at home, Sacramento at home, Philly, Houston, which is giving up a lot of points, Orlando, which stinks, and then the schedule gets tougher. But they've got everybody back. They've got some favorable games coming up. I think the Celtics might rattle off some wins.
That'd be great. That'd be nice. But like I said, the Minnesota game will be very, very difficult. It's not a gimme like it had been in the past. But you're right. There's this early December stretch, aside from the Spurs game, is going to be interesting. And I didn't see where the Spurs are on their schedule, if that's going to be one of those potential
1 p.m.
Yeah. Well, I know, but I don't know if where the Spurs are on the road, or is that part of their... I didn't check that out because it's Sunday morning for us, and I didn't do that much preparation for this.
Yeah, hopefully Pop just sits them all.
Yeah, that's what I'm getting at. That,
give all those guys a break.
Right. We'll see. But a potential here where a lot of things coming together. The Celtics are healthy, and, you know, Crowder, hopefully his ankle is, you know, he had a minutes restriction that he kind of went over, but they're trying to ease him back in. Hopefully Crowder is going to be 100% soon, and everything comes together. Then all of a sudden, the things that we were worried about, not so worried about anymore after hopefully a bunch of wins. Okay. That's it. Next show will be after the Minnesota game. Probably be, I don't know, me, you, Jam, whatever. A couple of us will be on the show. We'll talk about that. And that's it. Thanks for listening. This has been the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
My name's Jay, not John, man.
Thanks.
Progressive presents Mind Flowness with Flo.
Before you lies a beautiful meadow. In that meadow, Progressive Direct has placed its auto insurance rates alongside those of competitors. You select the lowest rate and feel a great sense of calm. A great sense of...
Compare Progressive Direct rates with competitors' rates so you can rest easy. Visit Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.